Castell signed off on all of ExxonMobil's requests and also agreed to keep his ruling secret. The next day, lawyers and executives from ExxonMobil joined the oblivious lawyers for PDVSA, Bank of New York, Lazard, and the bondholders in a Curtis conference room above Park Avenue. Robert Minyard, the treasurer of ExxonMobil's upstream division, attended with ExxonMobil's bond deal lawyers from the Los Angeles firm of Latham & Watkins. The oil corporation's delegation gave no hint that anything was out of the ordinary. A large bond closing is an excruciatingly detailed event, carefully sequenced and choreographed on blinking computer screens, all watched over by nervous lawyers. Hundreds of millions of dollars previously deposited by Venezuela to pay for the bonds went out by wire that morning to each bondholder who had agreed to sell. When the sellers received their money, they sent back electronic confirmation messages. In the late morning and early afternoon, the confirmations blinked through one after another. Signatures were affixed, photocopies exchanged. At about 2:10 p.m., Minyard took physical possession of the certificates of the repurchased bond shares and left the building. The Bank of New York's representative announced to those remaining in the conference room that it had received enough confirmations from bond sellers to declare the closing officially done. "I am prepared to release the collateral." That meant the money in the cash waterfall accounts could flow again. Bank of New York immediately initiated a wire transfer, sending the $242 million lying in ExxonMobil's stopped-up account to the corporation, free and clear. ExxonMobil's lawyers soon confirmed that the wire had gone through. They had their money. For Venezuela's account, the Bank of New York had a special Federal Reserve number to wire out the $300 million to the Chavez government. Before the bank's representative could push the final button, however, a new electronic message arrived, an order of attachment signed by Judge Castell freezing the Venezuelan funds in place. "The amount to be secured by this order is $300 million, the order declared. The bank's lawyers told Venezuela's lawyers that there was nothing they could do. The court had spoken, and the money would stay put. Arbitration law pays well, but is not rich with emotional reward. For the Steptoe attorneys, the late December Friday afternoon seizure of $300 million belonging to Hugo Chavez's government was like hitting a walk-off home run in the bottom of the ninth before a full house at Yankee Stadium. It was the sort of thing the lawyers involved would put on their resumes for years to come, as evidence of their litigating prowess. They would have to celebrate in quiet, however. ExxonMobil did not call public attention to what it had done. It did not offer any cowboy-tone declarations, and it did not permit its outside attorneys to do so either. The corporation's executives did not see profit in crowing or expressing emotion about Hugo Chavez. Dictators came and went. Nationalizations came and went. They had their $300 million. The money was now frozen, awaiting final rulings in the arbitrations. ExxonMobil has come to this court with unclean hands. Joseph Pizzurro, the lead attorney for Venezuela at Curtis, wrote in an impassioned filing to a federal judge a few weeks afterward. In its undisclosed appearance before Judge Castell, the corporation had told the judge that it needed a freezing order in secret because it did not wish to interfere with the orderly closing of the bond repurchase, but it never told the court why it did not want that transfer to be interfered with. The reason, Pizzurro continued, was simple. ExxonMobil wanted to make sure its $242 million, money provided to it by the government of Venezuela after months of cooperative negotiations, was moved out of the cash waterfall accounts before it acted to seize its partner's money. ExxonMobil's lawyers, as part of their cooperation with the Venezuela side over the bond deal, had even signed an agreement late in 2007 affirming that there was no provision of law, order, or injunction that would prohibit, conflict with, or in any way prevent the funds in the cash waterfall accounts from being released once the bond repurchase was completed. Obviously, if PDVSA had known that ExxonMobil was going to breach its obligations and representations, Venezuela would never have gone through with the bond deal. ExxonMobil knew this full well which was the reason its litigation counsel sought to keep the court file under seal. "The whole charade," Perzuro wrote, "was little more than a scheme calculated to conceal its misrepresentations, not only from PDVSA, but from this court." Stephen Davidson, for ExxonMobil, said he couldn't understand why counsel for Venezuela seemed so upset. "They call it unclean hands," Davidson told Judge Deborah Batts, who had inherited the case from Castell at a hearing on February 13th. "They say that we did something that's somehow inappropriate with respect to the transaction that closed at the end of the year," Davidson said. "Now, Your Honor, we would, as a matter of fact and law, we would say that's simply incorrect. There was nothing inappropriate done whatsoever with respect to that closing." Pizarro was the managing partner at Curtis, whose reputation with its client in Caracas had obviously been damaged by the December 28th fiasco. He had been schooled in Boston. He had a thick head of white hair and a boxer's pugnacious face with a flattened nose. He struggled to persuade Batts that Hugo Chavez had been wronged. "It was sort of a chicken-and-egg situation," Pizarro tried to explain when Batts called on him. "The ambush beside the cash waterfall had been a complicated affair," he noted. "We wouldn't get the money until we paid them off, but once we paid them off, we could get the money. Mobil was cooperating at all times. Indeed, they went and hired with us, Lazard, to come up with and help with a restructuring of the financing to create a solution to ensure ExxonMobil got its own $242 million. By sneaking into court on December 27th to obtain orders under seal from Judge Castell," Pizarro went on, "ExxonMobil had acted in bad faith. To pretend that that wasn't part of the plan in the scheme, to pretend that it had nothing to do with why they needed to get this under seal, and to pretend that that has nothing to do with a breach, is simply not credible." If Judge Batts was concerned about the ethics of ExxonMobil's executives or lawyers in this case, however, she gave no indication. "Under the law," she said when Pizarro had finished, "a freeze order of this type was appropriate. All that was required legally to maintain the freeze on the account was a probability or possibility that Chavez's government might not make good if it eventually lost out to ExxonMobil," Judge Batts said. "Therefore, I'm confirming the attachment. The matter is adjourned." If Hugo Chavez wanted his money back, he would have to seek it in the court of ExxonMobil's choosing.